I'm Clyde Lewis. You're about to listen to a sample of today's Ground Zero show.
I'm Clyde Lewis, and this is Ground Zero. Ground Zero coming to you live tonight, and we are certainly happy that we're broadcasting on Aftermath.fm. It's Aftermath.fm. TalkStreamLive.com has us lit as well. And as many of you know, we're currently settling into our new digs, the new studio at TalkCast PDX. So many of you across the country that are listening to this program may be listening to a delayed program until we can get that link up to a satellite so we can go live on the air for all of you. We're live, of course, now, but of course, in some places across the country, you'll be hearing recorded shows until we can get that hookup linked up. But in the meantime, we're grateful for what we have. We're lucky to have landed on our feet the way we have, and we're grateful for you, especially you, those of you who supported us with Aftermath.media. Remember, you can sign up at Aftermath.media for the library and the shows. It's $4.99 for the shows. It's $4.99 for the shows, or $9.99. You can get the entire library, which includes videos, everything we have in our library used for research. And people, of course, love that. They tell me all the time how much they enjoy it, how much they get lost in it. And, of course, you can get lost in it if you're really into studying and understanding what's going on and how you can actually debunk the debunkers. You see the fact checkers and everything. You can say, well, that fact checker can say whatever it wants to say. But I have right here a document from Aftermath.media that is, you know, it's nothing that we've produced. It's something that, you know, the experts have produced. Something they've overlooked. We do a lot of hard studying, and you can do a lot of hard work yourself to try and get the word out about all of these things. And that's what's important. So today I had a conversation with a friend of mine. We were having coffee, and she was talking about this thing. She said, you know, this thing that was hurtling towards the earth the other day, it was passing over, I think it was Tuesday, something was supposed to be passing across the earth. And she said, yeah, you know, it's too bad that you're not able to talk about it because you were trying to, you know, get the show started up again. And I said, well, yeah, I read about it, but, you know, it goes back to that idea that you're looking at the alien artifact that may be coming our way. And of course, last time we heard of something hurtling by the planet, it was supposed to come close to the planet, and science didn't know what it was. All of a sudden, we started hearing about Oumuamua. We started hearing about the possibility it's an alien spaceship. And so apparently, and this is what NASA is saying, you know, NASA is never a straight answer. They're saying that unknown mass, whatever it was, sped by our planet, wasn't an asteroid. First, they said it was an asteroid. They said, oh, this is an asteroid. They said, well, wait a minute. We don't know what it is, some unknown thing. Somebody else said, well, it's proof of alien life, obviously. It's some UFO, some huge mothership like Oumuamua. But apparently NASA had said officially that it was a Centaur rocket booster from Surveyor 2's doomed mission to the moon. That was, I believe, 1966. So 1966, it was Surveyor 2 going to the moon, and they say the rocket booster. They said they were able to definitely prove that they already saw the spectral data from another Centaur booster in 2020. They saw it was consistent, and so the mysterious object turned out to be a rocket booster. At least that's what they're saying. I mean, nobody was sure what it was, except they took a look at the, I guess you could call it the spectral data, seeing it had the same shape and the object was moving the same way. But of course, you know, when you look at these objects, it's always pan-STARRS. Pan-STARRS in Hawaii always measures this stuff, and they actually were responsible for giving us the Oumuamua story. It all goes back to what I did a seminar at the UFO gathering. It was the you know, the UFO festival they have out in Indian Wells. Contact in the Desert is what they call it. You go out there and it's in the middle of nowhere and you're doing a seminar. And they said, Clyde, we want you to talk about Oumuamua because of your relationship with Avi Loeb. And I said, what is my relationship with Avi Loeb? He said, well, you talk to him all the time. You always have him on the phone and have him on your show. He loves to talk to you. You know a lot about it because, and I said, just because I talk with Avi Loeb doesn't mean I'm anywhere near closer to discovering or finding out what Oumuamua is. I mean, I have my speculations. I even talked about it being a Bracewell probe, which, of course, Avi thought it was an interesting idea, concept. He said he didn't think it was a Bracewell probe, which, of course, a Bracewell probe is something that comes near the planet and basically is an alien artifact that's, you know, observing the planet, you know, sending out signals or what have you. But I said when I was at contact in the desert, I said, you know, this is a big, dumb object. And everybody got offended. What do you say? You're saying that a Oumuamua is a big, dumb object. I said, well, you know, a big, dumb object with respect to what Arthur C. Clarke had said. See, Arthur C. Clarke, I of course, read a lot of science fiction. I've read a lot of science fiction in my life, and Clarke and Asimov and others, Bradbury. You know, all of these guys have pretty much, I guess you could say, they were part of my childhood. And so now that I'm older, I'm able to use the stories that they've told and apply them to what we call fact today, because they were speculating about science fiction. But Arthur Clarke, he said once, he said, now every great science fiction story or every great story that has to do with aliens or something out in space always begins with the discovery of a big, dumb object. And so you can say that what hurtled past the Earth was a big, dumb object. They're just looking at it, oh my God, it could be aliens, it could be something. No, no, no. Anything that's a big, dumb object that's out in space, or anything that's a big, dumb object that winds up on planet Earth, whether it be an asteroid or something that looks like an alien artifact, always sparks a domino effect of wonder and intrigue, okay? And to prove that, it's like this thing that sped past the Earth, you know, that got a lot of people interested. Well, the big, dumb object in Clarke's parlance, or how he put it, he said it's any mysterious object, whether it be extraterrestrial, unknown, that has some immense power over people. It's the centerpiece of the entire story. It gains the attention of people. It breaks their thought about the things of the day. It distracts you. So when you read, for example, 2001: A Space Odyssey, that's Clarke's book, of course. The big dumb object here in his book, in 2001: A Space Odyssey, is the monolith. Okay, and so what's a monolith? It's this huge slab of rock or whatever. It's extraterrestrial and makes this noise, and it's kind of humming. And so when you read 2001: A Space Odyssey, the beginning of the book, and if you watch the film, you see these, it's set in the prehistoric times. The monolith is there, and a group of hominids or monkeys or whatever, they look at it. And when they touch it, they reach out and touch the monolith, and it triggers a considerable shift in their evolution, starting with the ability to use tools and then eventually use weapons, you see. And so the monkey reaching out to the monolith is no different than Michelangelo reaching out to touch the finger of God. It's no different than E.T., the extraterrestrial, taking his glowing finger and touching Elliot's finger. Can you picture that in your mind for a moment for me? Think about that for a moment. You look at the monkey from Arthur Clarke's 2001: A Space Odyssey. Think of that monkey. Think about him touching the monolith and then his bone that he's using to break that jaw or whatever he's doing turns into a weapon, eventually turns into a spaceship. Okay, that's the evolutionary process. And then you take a look at Adam, Michelangelo's Adam and God and Adam. And Adam is reaching out and touching the finger of God to get that knowledge. It's like Prometheus. It's like Prometheus sends down the fire. And then, of course, in the movie E.T. the Extraterrestrial, Elliot, ouch. He's sitting there reaching out, Elliot, and he touches the finger of Elliot. Okay, so it all starts with a big dumb thing or a big dumb object. So the apes in 2001: A Space Odyssey, they touch the slab, or they touch the monolith, and they become more than just apes. They become more human, and they receive the intelligence necessary to create machines to leave the Earth and touch another monolith in space. So mankind is then catapulted, but evidently, through the wormhole to make another leap in evolution, to meet the Creator, to gain knowledge, to learn from that. So the ape man reaching out to the alien technology takes on new meaning now, right? I mean, many times throughout history, we've reached out to the heavens and we've touched what we call the divine. We have seen depiction after depiction throughout history, as I've said. I mean, this whole week here on Ground Zero, we've been trying to rebuild our presence on the air, reaching out to you and others. And I've been following a lot of things, but One of the things that I've been following that I haven't really commented on, and I'm sure many people that have been on the air that haven't had this problem of trying to rebuild everything, I've been following these crazy monolith stories. You know, like, you know, the monolith that was first found in Utah, that thing had been there for 4 years. 4 years, this non-magnetic metallic pillar stood on red sandstone in a slot canyon in San Juan County, Utah. And I was following the police reports. I was following all the other reports about this thing. It was nearly 10 feet tall, probably about 9 feet 5 or maybe more, about 10 feet tall. And then it came to a point with the prism. So it was more than a monolith. It was an obelisk. And it was discovered by biologists or state biologists who saw it while they were surveying the area in a helicopter. Well, within days, members of the public were using GPS to find this monolith. They made their way to the location there in Utah. And then, no one knew who was behind this monolith. No one knew the identity of who made it. No one knew anything about it. So it was a mystery. And so, it was a mystery that wound up with a lot of speculation. Was it vandals? Was it some environmentalists making this? Was it aliens? And what's interesting is the evolution of an idea, the evolution of this big dumb object known as the monolith, has captured the imaginations of a lot of people, but it's leading us into what I call the anima mundi. The anima mundi is the cosmic awareness of what is coming, and we can escape from the normal and start talking about something that's a little bit more paranormal tonight on Ground Zero. So we'll be back with more. Join us. Keep it here. And we're going to take you on a little trip about a big dumb object and what it's leading to with regards to what is out there right here on Ground Zero. Don't go away.
I'm Clegg Lewis, and you've just listened to a segment of Ground Zero. In order to access the complete archive shows and podcasts, you must sign up on our secured server at aftermath.media. It's only $4.99 a month for the archive shows and podcasts. Or if you want access to the Ground Zero online library, which includes videos, audio clips, ebooks, documents, a social media platform, plus the archive shows and podcasts, it's $9.99 a month. Again, that's aftermath.media. That's aftermath.media. Thanks for supporting Ground Zero.